Hey everyone, this is Jackie and Me, Chapter 5, A Slight Change. When you see time travel stories in the movies, the person who travels through time always seems to wind up exactly where he was planning to go. If he wanted to visit Napoleon, his time machine takes him to Napoleon's living room. If she wanted to witness the invention of fire, she just happens to land at the exact moment some cave person accidentally smacked two rocks together to ignite the first spark. Uncanny, isn't it? That's the movies for you. In the real world, though, things don't always work out so perfectly. When I lay down on my bed and prepared for my trip, I was expecting I'd wake up at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, New York. That's where the Dodgers used to play. Or maybe I would wind up at Jackie Robinson's house, or wherever he happened to be at the time. But when I woke up, I realized immediately that I wasn't at any of those places. It was totally dark and cold. I was outdoors at night. The ground was hard, concrete. Shards of glass were littered around. There were noises of cars honking. I was scared. "Hello?" I whispered hesitantly. "Anyone here?" Somebody groaned. The voice came from about 20 feet away. Carefully, I stood up and felt around me. All the stuff I had brought along seemed to be there. I felt my way toward the voice. My eyes were beginning to adjust to the dark. I could make out the form of a man. "Are you okay, mister?" I asked. The guy groaned again. He was lying on his side, clutching his arm. When I got closer, I could tell he was a black man. He was bleeding pretty heavily from his left arm near the hand. "Broken bottle," he whispered. "I tried to fight them off." My mom told me she has seen people walk into the emergency room after getting attacked. The natural reaction is to use your hands to protect yourself. Unfortunately, that exposes your wrists, the site of a major artery leading away from the heart. If the attacker has a knife or some other sharp object, that artery can be opened pretty easily. If you lose too much blood, it's all over. I took off my belt as quickly as I could and wrapped it around the guy's forearm. Mom told me the important thing to do when an artery is open is to block off the blood flow somewhere between the wound and the heart. I tightened the belt around the guy's arm and held it there. In a little while, the bleeding seemed to have stopped and the guy was able to sit up. "Thank you, brother," he said. "I hate to think what might have happened if you hadn't come along."
"It was nothing," I said.
"Saving a man's life? I'd say that's something."
"Are you Jackie Robinson?"
"No," he groaned. "Name is Bankhead, Dan Bankhead." He stuck out his right hand, his good hand, and I shook it.
"Joe Stoshak," I said.
He did not let go of my hand, so I grabbed on tight and pulled him up to a standing position. He was about 6 feet tall and athletically built.
Dan Bankhead.
What the heck was I doing in a dark alley with this guy? I wanted to meet Jackie Robinson. Something must have gone terribly wrong. I must have messed up somehow. Maybe I didn't go back to 1947. I had no idea where I was or when.
"If you want," Bankhead said, "I can take you to Jackie Robinson."
"You know Jackie Robinson?" I asked.
"Follow me, kid."
Bankhead picked up my duffel bag with his good hand. I grabbed the cooler and my suitcase. I didn't want anyone to touch the suitcase. People might start asking questions. Nobody walks around with an empty suitcase unless they're planning to fill it with something. Bankhead led me out of the alley. As soon as we reached the opening, I was nearly blinded by the light. Flashing signs, enormous billboards. There must have been 10 theaters on the street. "Ethel Merman in Annie Get Your Gun," announced one of them in flashing lights. "Brigadoon! Finian's Rainbow!" On top of one building was a giant billboard of a cup of coffee, and real steam pouring out of it. I had landed in New York City. I was sure of that. In Louisville, at night, most everybody's indoors, watching TV, sleeping, whatever. Here, it was like daytime. There were people all over the place, rushing around as if they had a place to go. The men all wore hats. Old cars filled the street, big yellow taxis with checkerboard patterns running down the sides.
"You must be new in town," commented Bankhead. "Only tourists gawk like that."
"Where are we?" I asked. Then I noticed a street sign at the intersection. It said 43rd Street in one direction and Broadway in the other.
"Times Square," Bankhead replied. "The center of the universe."
I thought New York City was supposed to be safe in the good old days.
"The good old days," Bankhead chuckled. "Good for white folks, maybe. Ain't so hot for Negroes who stray out of Harlem."
"Why did they do this to you?"
"Three guesses," Bankhead said. "And the first two don't count."
He led me across the street, and we walked down Broadway in the direction of 42nd Street. There were more theaters, movie theaters. Bob Hope in My Favorite Brunette. Abbott and Costello in Buck Privates Come Home. Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life.
"My dad has that on tape," I remarked. Bankhead looked at me strangely.
Oops, I'd better be more careful about what I say, I realized. They didn't have VCRs in 1947. For all I knew, they didn't even have TV. I wasn't sure how people would react if they found out I came from the future. As we walked past 40th Street and 39th Street, there were fewer lights and the neighborhood became noticeably less busy. Bankhead told me he was a baseball player, a pitcher with the Memphis Red Sox in the Negro Leagues. He had been a Marine during World War II. His 27th birthday would be coming up in 2 weeks.
"With a little luck, I'm going to celebrate it by pitching for the Dodgers," he said proudly.
Fat chance. I knew perfectly well that Jackie Robinson was the only African-American on the Dodgers. At the corner of 36th Street and Broadway, there was a shoe store. The lights weren't on inside, but as we walked by, I saw a black kid in the window. He looked to be about my age. There was something strange about that kid. I stopped and looked at him. He looked straight at me without moving. Maybe he's robbing the store, I thought. Should I call a policeman? The kid just kept staring at me. If he was robbing the place, he wouldn't waste time looking at me. I waved to the kid. He waved back at me like he knew me. As I turned my head to the left to tell Bankhead about the kid in the window, I noticed the kid turned his head at the same time. I turned my head to the other side. So did the black kid. Wait a minute. That was no window. It was a mirror. I was looking at my reflection. I quickly brought my hand up to my face. The skin was dark. I had turned into a black kid. Frantically, I touched the skin on my arms. It felt like it always did, but the darkness wouldn't rub off. I looked in the mirror again and touched my hair. I must have let out a horrified gasp because Bankhead and a few passers-by looked at me curiously.
"Joe, are you okay?" Bankhead asked. "You're white as a ghost." If he only knew. "Come on, Joe," Bankhead said, a certain annoyance in his voice now. "I don't have all night. Do you want to meet Jackie Robinson or not?"
What happened, it occurred to me, wasn't so crazy. The first time I traveled back through time, I had gone to bed wishing I was a grown-up. When I woke up in 1909, I was one. This time, I went to bed, wishing I could experience what Jackie Robinson experienced when he was breaking into the big leagues. The only way that could happen would be if I became an African American. So when I woke up in 1947, I was black. Traveling back in time wasn't quite as simple as I had imagined. Chapter 6, The Robinson Family. I was still trying to get past the initial shock
of realizing I was a black kid when Dan Bankhead stopped at 34th Street. A huge building took up the entire block there. The sign across the front read, Macy's. I'd heard of Macy's. They have that Thanksgiving Day parade every year. It was probably the most famous store in the world. Jackie Robinson lived in Macy's? Bankhead led me across Broadway to the other side of the street. He stopped in front of a much smaller building. There was a small sign on it, McAlpin Hotel. We walked up the steps and into the lobby. Mr. Robinson's room, please, Bankhead asked the desk clerk politely. He looked at us, disgustedly. Bankhead still had some blood on him, and he was pretty messed up. But the desk clerk told him the room number anyway, and we walked upstairs. Bankhead stopped in front of the door and did his best to straighten himself up, brushing his clothes in a futile effort to smooth out the wrinkles. Then he knocked on the door. Who is it? A woman's voice hollered from inside. Danny, Bankhead replied, winking at me. And a friend. The door cracked open, and I could see the face of a black lady. She struggled to get the door open without dropping the tiny baby in her arms. The lady appeared to be in her early 20s. Danny, what happened to you? She asked, alarmed. And who's your young friend? I'll be fine, Rachel. This young man wants to meet Jackie. The bedroom door opened, and out strolled a man with a pigeon-toed walk I had only seen in photos. For the moment, I wasn't thinking about the color of my skin. Here I was, meeting the great Jackie Robinson. The Jackie Robinson, who was not only a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame, but also one of the most famous and important Americans of the 20th century. Goose pimples rose on my arms. I could hardly wait to get back home and start writing my report. Danny, who did this to you? Jackie asked, ignoring me for the moment. His voice was a shock. He was a big, strong man, but he had a high-pitched voice, like a boy. I didn't catch their names, Bankhead replied. The old photos of Jackie Robinson don't do him justice. He was a very handsome man. His skin was dark, so dark it was almost black. He was wearing gray slacks and a white shirt, which made his skin seem even darker. He was a little shorter than Dan Bankhead, but more muscular. His eyes were deep, intense. He turned toward me and stared right at me. He gripped me with his eyes. Who's the kid? Jackie asked. Joe Stoshak, I volunteered, grabbing for his hand. Everybody calls me Stosh. It's a pleasure and honor to meet you, Mr. Robinson. Everybody calls me Jack, Stosh. Mrs. Robinson handed the baby over to Jackie while she took Bankhead to the kitchen to tend to his wounds. The baby didn't like being jostled and let out a yelp. Shh, Jackie cooed. It's way past your bedtime, sugar lump. I couldn't tell if the baby was a boy or a girl. I didn't want to say the wrong thing and offend anybody. What's the baby's name? I asked, playing it safe. Jackie, Jackie replied. Big help. Jackie could be a boy's name or a girl's name. He's 19 weeks old, Jackie said, glancing at the bags I had brought with me. Where's your mama, son? I wasn't sure what to say. I was hesitant to tell anyone the whole story of how I traveled back through time. It was too unbelievable. They might think I was putting them on, or that I was crazy. Where's your mama, Stosh? Jackie repeated. Home. Where's home? Louisville, Kentucky. My word, are you a runaway?
No.
In some kind of trouble?
No.
Did your mama send you here?
Not exactly.
Son, I don't have time for guessing games, Jackie snapped. His steely eyes flashed from warmth to anger in an instant. I could see he had a quick temper, like me. I made a mental note to try not to make him angry again. Mrs. Robinson came back out of the kitchen with Dan Bankhead. I guessed that she must be a nurse, like my mom. Bankhead was all cleaned up in fresh bandages had been expertly applied to his wounds. "Jack," Mrs. Robinson said, "Danny says this boy may have saved his life." That softened Jackie a bit. He thanked me with his eyes. Bankhead said he had to go, and Jackie led him to the door. Bankhead thanked me again for helping him and said good night. Then Jackie cooed to Jackie Jr. that it was time to go back to sleep as he carried him into the bedroom. "Your mama packed enough food for an army," Mrs. Robinson said, putting my cooler on the counter. "Where were you planning to sleep tonight?"
"I hadn't really thought about it, ma'am."
"A young boy like you just shows up at somebody's house at night with a suitcase, and you have no idea where you're going to sleep?"
It's a long story, ma'am," I stuttered, backing toward the door.
"Maybe I'd better be leaving."
"Don't be crazy," she replied. "You can sleep on the couch. Tomorrow we'll try to find your mama."
"Thank you, ma'am."
"It's the least we can do after what you did for Danny," Jackie called out from the other room. "Our house is your house."
While Mrs. Robinson put sheets and covers on the couch in the living room, I looked around the place. It was tiny, certainly not a place I would expect a big star like Jackie Robinson to live. The couch took up a big part of the living room. There was no TV set. Bottles and diapers and baby toys were scattered around. Time travel is exhausting. As soon as Mrs. Robinson finished making the couch up for me, I dove into it.
"What's today's date?" I asked before she turned off the light.
"Monday, April 14th.
1947?
"Of course 1947, she replied, looking at me curiously. Then she flipped off the light. I couldn't sleep. Can you blame me? Here I was, more than 50 years into the past, sleeping on Jackie Robinson's couch. And I had somehow been turned into a black kid. I was too nervous and scared to sleep. It would have been impossible to sleep anyway, because Jackie Jr. kept waking up and crying every few hours during the night. The first time, Mrs. Robinson tiptoed out to the kitchen to warm up a bottle and feed it to the baby. The next time, Jackie did the honors. Sometime in the middle of the night, after he fed the baby, I saw Jackie tiptoe back into the kitchen. He poured himself a glass of milk, then spooned some sugar into it and stirred it up. Then he took a bag of bread out of the refrigerator and took out a slice. He sat down, dunked the bread in the milk, and bit off a piece.
"Can't sleep, huh?" I whispered.
Jackie jumped out of his chair, almost spilling the milk all over himself. He must have forgotten I was sleeping on the couch.
"Opening day jitters," Jackie said, sponging milk off the table.
"Baseball season starts tomorrow?"
"Yeah. I hope you get some hits."
"It's not just about hits, Stosh," he said softly, looking at me with those eyes.
"What's it about, then?" I asked.
Jackie took a long time before answering. "My grandfather was a slave in Georgia. My father was a sharecropper. All their lives, they never had a chance to better themselves. They were never allowed to better themselves because they were Negroes. Now I have a chance, not just to better myself, but to make things better for every Negro in this country. If I'm successful, young Negro boys like you won't have to fight so hard. You won't have to put up with what my grandfather, my father, and I had to put up with. But if I fail..." His voice trailed off. He looked like he had taken the weight of every African-American in the country on his shoulders. "You won't fail," I assured Jackie. "You're going to be great."
"You sound pretty sure, Stosh."
I wasn't planning to tell Jackie or anybody else that I had come from the future. But as he stared at me with those piercing eyes, I felt compelled to tell the truth.
"Mr. Robinson," I said, taking a deep breath.
"I know you're not going to believe this, but I come from the future."
"Excuse me?" Jackie asked, as if he might not have heard what I said. I traveled back in time, more than 50 years, to meet you.
You did, eh? Jackie chuckled, then went to look out the window.
Funny, I don't see your spaceship parked outside. I hope the police didn't tow it away.
I didn't use a spaceship, I said, feeling a little angry that he was making fun of me. I use baseball cards to travel through time.
Baseball cards, you say?
Yeah. You see, I'm actually a white kid. I sort of turned black during the time travel procedure. I came here because I'm doing a report on you at school for Black History Month.
Wait a minute, Jackie said, holding up one hand and clutching his stomach with the other. I can accept that traveling through time may be possible. I may even be able to believe a white kid could turn black. But Black History Month?
At that, Jackie let out a loud guffaw that woke the baby.
You've got to be kidding. White kids from Kentucky studying our history. Now I know you're crazy.
You don't have to believe me, I told Jackie. But because of people like you, there are going to be a lot of changes over the next 50 years. You're going to win the Rookie of the Year award this year. I'll bet you on that.
That's a bet I'll take any day, Jackie said, thrusting out his hand to shake mine. There's no such thing as a Rookie of the Year award.
Jackie chuckled some more as he came over to tuck me in.
I like you, Stosh, he said. Hey, do you want to come to the game tomorrow? You know, keep me company.
Sure, I replied. Who are you playing?
The Braves.
Atlanta?
Jackie looked at me with the same expression his wife had when I asked her the year. I realized instantly that there were no Atlanta Braves in 1947. The Braves played in Milwaukee before they moved to Atlanta.
I mean, Milwaukee, I quickly corrected myself. The Milwaukee Braves.
Jackie kept staring at me, the same puzzled expression on his face.
I guess you don't follow baseball, he said.
Of course I do. Before they moved to Milwaukee, they were the Boston Braves. How could I be so dumb? I'd have to be a lot more careful in the future.
And in the past.